Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and living and what that means.
Your lips are getting in the way again.
To you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
And she's looking at me.
Where are you?
And today we're going to talk about preparing for winter or, baby, it's cold outside. All right. So preparation for winter. And it seems to me that almost everything about sustainability, at least in our life, is all about preparing for winter. You know, I mean, getting through the hard, cold times. You know, building the shelter is about preparing for winter. Harvesting, planning food, preparing, getting your animals ready, water issues.
Okay, so in the summer, it's about winter, and in the winter, it's about summer.
In the winter, it's about winter for
okay,
me.
But you don't plan for summer, that's why. So, yeah, I mean, the thing is that what I'm always surprised about when I go to somebody's house that lives in a traditional way is how little there is being prepared for anything and no backup heating system. I mean, it just amazes me. And so I'm just shocked at how little people plan. And my life revolves and always has revolved around planning for the next
thing. It's excusable, though, in that someone else is providing most everything. Some centralized system is providing heat, cool, food,
yeah, but what if
water.
That goes away?
Yeah, well, there's the problem.
I want to have plan B, or maybe I don't even want plan
A. Right, but most people are just kind of bebopping around, hoping to get through the day, hoping to get on to the next day. And I think one of the nice things about living sustainably is it kind of slaps you upside the head and says, no, you got to think further ahead. You've got to be prepared. Because if you're not, I mean, you're going to die.
Well, I think we impose that upon ourselves. There's an awful lot of the world that doesn't have a choice in living that way, that every day becomes kind of a struggle. And I don't really want my life to be a struggle. I don't see it that way, because if I have to, I can go buy all those things that other people are buying to pretend that they don't have to have control over what's happening. And that's really what it is, because in 5 minutes or less, the government could decide or the corporation could decide you don't need heat anymore or you don't need hot water. I know one time when I was in Moscow, Russia, so we got there on May 1st and there was hot water for showers and stuff. And then by the 5th, we turned on the water and all we had was cold water and it was still snowing. And it's because every year they turn the hot water off because it's this massive boiler for all these huge buildings.
Right. Well, no great big brother has to turn off your hot water. The reality is systems break.
Yeah, things, whether it's in your house yes, that's right, like mm-hmm. our hot water tank. Yeah. So the hot water tank breaking is a good example, because as soon as it broke, we're like, okay, well, so I went in and I turned the breaker off. I think a lot of people wouldn't even know to do that, but I could hear it. I knew something was wrong because the water pump had kicked on twice in a row, and that is not a good thing because it shouldn't be doing that. And so then I heard the water, so I flipped off the breaker in the breaker box. And then, you know, so nothing is going to get fixed right away. We know that. So we have a solar bag to put hot water in from the wood stove.
Right.
And everybody's still okay. And we still have what we need. And that's what I'm talking about. Why are we waiting on somebody to do this for us? Now, the flip side of that is a lot of us go off to work and work a lot of hours. We either have to work a lot of hours because we are in corporate America, or we have to work a lot of hours because we need 3 jobs to meet a basic rent payment. So we maybe don't have time or we're too tired. So we expect in exchange for this work that we do for these companies that they somehow are going to provide for us. And it doesn't work that way.
Okay, so this is not all about being prepared. This is about preparing for winter. So
what's the difference, Jay?
Okay, well, the difference is that I've got a list of questions here to ask you, and wandering down that cul-de-sac, I'm not going to get to any of these questions.
All right, so, ask away, Mr. Warmke. Right. I'm ready for it.
Okie dokie. So item bullet point number 2.
Okay, number 2.
talks about preparing for food preservation, right? So winter preparation begins sometime in the summer, as we said.
Yeah, or even late spring. So. And it doesn't just happen for us. It's also for the animals, like gathering red raspberry leaves and comfrey leaves and just really starting to dry different medicinal herbs. That's all going to happen, maybe the end of April sometimes we might start doing some of that. Mm-hmm. And we're definitely going to be cutting greens and drying maybe some chives and all that kind of stuff very early in the year. So each month we're going to be preparing for winter. Absolutely.
And of course you do consume some of what you harvest you're harvesting
it. Sure.
But you set aside a bit because obviously you're not going to have a garden in the wintertime.
Well, you might, but you more than likely you're going to have 365 days until you have that food again, unless you do what we do. We've got a little hoop. Sometimes we grow lettuces and greens inside the house, and those are all options. But the other bits of food that are getting preserved, and that's still happening. We just did massive amounts of apples to make fried apples that we canned, and applesauce and apple butter, because apples are plentiful and they're really good right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping so the last bit of what we're doing right now are Jerusalem artichokes that have been dug or need the rest of them to be dug, and a few more potatoes. And then we should be done with all that. And then the next cycle will be just starting to think about what are we going to grow next summer and starting plants and things like that. So what we're basically doing that first part of the summer is thinking through what part of this that we're producing and what parts it's being produced, maybe what they call wilding, so wild plants that we might gather. What are those things that we want to harvest? And also, what kinds of plants are going to be companion plants to those? And again, that's all going to change over the course of the summer based on what we want in the winter. Maybe we'll have two or three crops of something. So we've got greens that grow best when it's cold, and then greens that grow when it's hot, and then greens that grow again when it's cold. We have squash that's going to keep through the winter, so we're going to grow some of that, but not all squash does that. So.
And as you like to say, we don't grow everything that we need because other people are better at
it. That's right.
So you can purchase those from your farmer's market or the food auction where you buy a lot of the food. But it does feel to me anyway that the preserving hits its stride in the fall. I mean,
that's when the bulk of things are ready.
Right. Now, for me getting ready for the winter, a lot of what I focus on or think about is firewood, preparing. And there is some preparation for that. I mean, I do start to identify maybe there are some dead trees that I mark or can cut them down so they season for a while. It's better if they're still vertical. They don't get as wet. But get ready to cut those. And I always plan. It's sort of like doing my taxes or something. I plan to do it very early, but it usually ends up being, late as we need it. So as the weather turns colder, that's when I'm out there with the chainsaw cutting these things up and chopping the firewood. But it's a long process.
Clear, I think it is better that it happens later, because if you try to cut too soon, you're going to be dealing with hornets and wasps and poison ivy and it's too hot and all kinds of issues that aren't that great. So it is a cold weather or a cooler weather thing, although it would be great. And I know the years we have had a full building full of wood this time of the year, we feel pretty rich. Rather than to have it, a third full or something like now, and we're going, all right, well, maybe.
Then you're just hoping for a nice, cold, sunny day to go
out there
and chop it up. But it's better than a gym membership, so.
Well, we're always thinking, too, about things like wood for starting the fire and, picking up bark and all kinds of stuff. And we have special boxes that we keep all that in that aren't too big to carry. And so a lot of what we do around firewood is really a continuous process. And you and I are thinking about it. I don't think anybody else. They just seem to think it's a cool, cool to have a fire. Everybody loves to have
right,
a fire.
Right, and it just sort of magically materializes. But and it is a balance in my mind, again, between having really good wood or cleaning up junk. You know, I want to clean up the junk, but that junk wood typically doesn't burn very well.
So we just use it at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Or at the end.
The days that aren't super cold.
Yeah.
And then there's, of course, once the harvest is finished, then you've got to put your raised beds to bed.
Yeah.
So what's involved with that?
Well, mainly we're just going to pull up anything that's left. And so there may be some weeds, but there's often like just recently, there's lots and lots of tomato plants. And so all of that's dead, and we pull all that up and put it on the burn pile so we don't save weed seeds. And we do some mulching, and we also have a little hoop that's, I don't know, it's maybe 4 feet high along the tire wall on part of the house. And we grow greens that we start there in August. And then that's got this week a double layer of blanket, a garden blanket, we call it, over it, which it already had one, but this is good down to 20 degrees or so. And we maybe should have picked all the greens, but I think they're still okay for the next few days. We do things like put the fig tree, we lay the fig tree down, and we haven't covered it over with any hay yet, but we have it a blanket around it. And anything that we feel like needs protected. The roses are still blooming, and so we haven't done anything with those, but we'll mulch around them. So everything is a process. We also maybe in some years past, we've moved the muck from the barns, from the winter barns from the year before that's completely composted. We might move that into some of the beds for spring.
So you're getting them all ready for planting.
Yeah, but we're saying we're putting the garden to bed. And mm-hmm. we're putting everything to bed. And the cool thing is it's not asleep at all, because if you dig down, even on a cold day, you'll see lots of life. And the trees and the plants that have deeper root systems are all repairing the root system and drawing potassium from the soil to really make that plant ready to burst out the next spring. So we got to get it right in the late summer and the early fall in order for everything to come through winter fine.
And there is a lot of cleanup of all. You mentioned all the tomato plants and all of the brush and all of that. And we do tend to, I mean, there's the sort of the Hallmark card scene of people raking up the leaves and burning everything.
Well, we don't burn the leaves.
I know. The leaves make good mulch. But the but there is a lot of scrap. And I always wonder a little bit about the ecological issues of burning brush, you know. I mean,
you do now. That's shocking.
I know,
because
I
you surely deep, do it. A
I,
lot.
I have deep thoughts while I'm out there, you know, burning and
like the time
the
you set the hillside on fire.
Okay, well that was that was strategic burns.
Oh, so okay.
You notice we haven't had anyway. So
okay.
So anyway, but there is a lot of that cleanup, and I just wonder. You know, if you let it compost, it releases the same kind. It's just an accelerated kind of release of all those bad things.
Yeah, with carbon.
Into the atmosphere.
There's carbon too. Well, the other thing, we have water. We have some rain barrels, and so we work on getting all those emptied and not allowing them to fill back up, and cut some raspberry canes for the goats to dry and be ready for winter.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about water in a second, but I wanted to remind you that you're listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
And it is the end of the warm weather as we know it.
Oh,
and that's
a not
thank
a thank God.
God.
No, it's not. Uh-huh.
So when we're talking about preparing for the winter, and you had mentioned about the water. And the water is when you have animals, one of the big expense in the wintertime is providing them with warm water, keeping water from freezing. But there are also some other issues around water. All of the rain barrels get disconnected because the freezing can damage the mechanism there. So we want to open up the valves, let the water flow through the outside solar shower, turning off any outside spigots and opening those up, really just preparing. Because when water freezes, It has a nasty habit of expanding. And if it's confined in a space, then that expansion is going to cause problems.
Well, with the goats, though, there's a lot of preparation. I know this year I moved one of the cattle water bins and put – I have this little round disc that looks like kind of like a donut, and it doesn't get hot to the touch. And I changed everything around this year, and so I do have to have some heated water buckets, but I'm trying to avoid that as much as possible, seeing if this will pull a lot less electricity. But we also have to have the barns ready, so if we have to shut them up because it gets below zero, and we need to have all make sure all of the, we call them ski jackets, are clean and ready to go, and little sweaters when we have
The goats get so cute, right? Yeah, wearing their little sweaters.
Yeah. But so there's a lot of preparation at the barn to make sure that we have what we need, and also to be mindful about feed, because if the weather's going to be super bad and we're running low, we can't we may not be able to get the feed, so we want to make sure we have plenty of things on hand in case of bad weather. So,
well, I think that's another thing to consider in preparation for winter, is because we have had a number of times, we're fairly remote where we are, where we get stuck for days, you know, up on the hill, and you have to make sure that you do have supplies, adequate supplies mm-hmm. on hand. We try and do that anyway, but
right, but it's not, I don't think, you know, like I'm always shocked that people, they say, oh, it's going to have a bad storm or whatever, and everybody runs to the grocery store.
No, the liquor store. That's
okay. Well, that's
first.
In the grocery store, and mm-hmm. so, well, I think it is anyway, lots of them, but that's not the point. The point is, don't you have stuff? Because we have thanks for nothing season, which lasts about 4 months, and we don't even touch the amount of food that we have available, and because you're always making more food, so we take some food out at the freezer or out of the jars that we've canned, and then we make more food, and we make enough to can and a little bit to freeze, like if we're making soup or whatever. So when the weather's turning bad, I can't remember a time other than if we were running low on hay for the goats and the llamas, if we would run to the store for something. I just can't even imagine it, because we just make do. We don't even really think about it. And this is the part I find shocking about people in general, is that they haven't a plan. They have no idea. If the weather's going to be bad, they got to run to the store and buy bottled water and, as you said, maybe liquor. I don't know about that. But bread, you know, bread and milk. It's like, wow, that's so bizarre. Such a bizarre thought to me. I can't get my mind around it.
Part of living sustainably is that these outside influences don't really impact you as dramatically, right? You're moving along. You're preparing.
There's a rhythm to it each year.
And you just assume that in the wintertime you may be restricted in some of the things you can get and some of the places you can go. But life
is
about restrictions.
That's right. It is. That's life. So one of the other things that we do that is in preparation is that, well, everything in the barn and the barnyard gets cleaned every single day until about the end of October. And then we start doing what's deep bedding. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do is make soil in a different kind of way. So the goats will waste about a third of a bale of hay every single bale. So that just gets left where it lies, and then they pee and poop, and it all builds up and creates this kind of cold frame effect of a really warm mattress for them. And then in the spring...
So it's an underground radiant heat,
basically. Yes, it is, because you wouldn't be able to dig down and put your hand down in there. It would just be too hot.
I think people need to understand that as material composts, it generates heat.
Right. Well, and it needs lots of urine, and they definitely provide that. The more urine, the better.
I knew that they had a purpose.
So
I was searching for it, but
well, so they're creating the soil for a year from this spring, and that's a good thing. And we move all that out of there in the spring, and we put it in a special place for it to decompose, and then a year from then, we will have more material for the more compost for the raised beds.
And on the home front, winter preparation typically involves, you know, a certain amount of weatherproofing, where the windows, of course, we want to make sure that the windows seal properly. Some of the older windows that we have, we put a plastic
coating
over that.
Well, we've been replacing them too.
I've been getting better at sill plates on doors. I'm thinking of branching into a whole new business of putting sill plates on doors.
You put it under the door, Jay.
Yeah. Well, I put them on the door and under the
but
door.
That may be the problem.
Around and through. So really, you're just trying to make sure the balance there. I'm not going to give away too much of my trade secrets, but you want the door to open freely
and
but
shut.
Seal completely.
Yes. Uh-huh. The cats would agree to.
Yeah, well, that's why cat doors were invented. And so there's a lot of that takes place because I have a wife who wanders around going, there's a draft somewhere.
Oh, I can't stand the cold. I just can't stand it.
Right.
Well, let's talk about holiday prep because winter is full of all kinds of opportunities to have fun. And so, yes, you can go hiking and do all that kind of stuff, but I don't like the winter, even though as a farmer I have to be outside a lot. But so we have Yule, we have Thanksgiving, sometimes we celebrate the Chinese New Year. Definitely have lots of company and people coming to eat with us quite often. So there's a certain amount of preparation, and we try to have an annual shopping list. So we are ready, and we have plenty of toilet paper and all the things that we need. And
I always love that, toilet paper and all the things that we need.
That's pretty important.
There's usually more than two things on my list, you know. Item number one, toilet paper. Item number two, everything else.
Okay. Right? Anything
okay,
else?
Okay, move along.
What's
move
on
along.
Your list? What else is on your list, Jay? I don't know. I'm afraid
coffee.
To
coffee.
Ask. Oh, coffee.
That's even up above toilet
yeah,
paper.
Yeah, coffee and shampoo.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so far.
So I make my own. And
so
what,
far, so
where
good.
Where does yours come from?
The coffee?
No, the shampoo. Anyway, so the idea is to have a plan. And one of the great things, I think, about having lived as long as we have where we are, because our life together had been moving, you know, every 3 or 4 years or so, because we were on an adventure, and now we have a different kind of adventure. So we've been in the same place now for more than 15 years. And I thought it would be boring, but there's a comfort to the seasonal changes and all the things that we have to do to get ready. And, you know, the first couple of years, it felt kind of crazy because things would just sort of spring on us and we didn't even realize we should have done something differently. But now it's just a thing of just an easiness about it. And yes, it's hard work and there's a lot to do, but I'm used to it now. And it gives me comfort that all those apples that are in the bins for fresh eating and in the jars for pancakes and waffle toppings and all that, that's all sitting there waiting to be used and enjoyed. And in the process, there will be lots of mornings. And this I think about in the summer, lots of mornings of sitting in front of the fire with you. And you've got your cup of coffee and you've got your fuzzy slippers on. And we'll be talking about a lot of things that interest us. And I think there's preparation that comes the rest of the year for that as well, because we have to slow down. We have to figure out how do we, as the season changes and light is less and it's cold and difficult to be outside, what are some things that we could do? And this is maybe a rhetorical question. But what are some things that we could do or other people could do that would help to slow down, mm-hmm. help people to slow down?
Well, I think one of the values, I mean, you mentioned about being in the same place for a significant period of time. And I think it gives me an opportunity to take stock. You know, it's like you come to this point at the end of the year. You've been preparing for it, but then you see the progress from a year ago. You know, you say, oh, you know what? A year ago at this time when we were doing this, this was our situation. Now it's improved or something broken. It's not improved or whatever, but it gives you a yardstick to measure against. And as you mentioned, sitting in front of the fire, I think many times, you know, and this may be a personal fantasy, but I look at that as the payoff for the year's work, right? You get to then have an excuse in the wintertime to slow down a bit and to really sit in front of the fire and read or watch some British mystery on the Netflix DVD, which does still come in the mail, and which apparently our interns think is very cute. That
we say it's quaint.
Yes, it's very quaint that we still get little round discs. But that's kind of the nice payoff where you can just say, all right, it's okay to be slowed down. You know, the world wants you to be slowed down. There seems to be
no, the world wants you to speed up.
Well, the world wants us to slow down.
Oh, but
our society wants us to speed up because when you slow down, it gives you a little more time to reflect, a little less, frantic spending. You know, that's
yeah. Well, one thing that also happens in the summer is that we take time to plan for those months of the winter. So our planning process starts in July and into August, and we have a couple of days where we go away, and we really do plan out what are those months going to look like, and what are we going to be teaching, what workshops, what classes, do we have book deadlines, what are the things that we need to accomplish during those winter months, so we can make sure that we have some of that time. And I know one thing that you do is just get up at some ungodly hour, like 3:30 or 4:30, because then you have the afternoon to do things that you would like to do besides the writing. And but again, and this is a theme through everything we're talking about in the podcast, is planning. And you act like it's pulling teeth to do it. I find it to be very rewarding, but then at the end, you find it to be really helpful. And I wouldn't say grateful for the process, but you see the value of it, because when you're sitting there in your fuzzy slippers and your cup of coffee and nothing is pushing you to do anything that day except for what you want to do, that's on your list or no list at all, that's the payoff from the summer and all the planning.
Mm-hmm. So, from my fuzzy slippers to you, let me remind you that you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. And thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is, Annie?
Play nice with others, clean up your own mess, do some planning, and eat your veggies, Jay Warmke.
Eat your vegetables that have been canned lovingly throughout the fall, harvested in the summer, and eaten all winter long. Okay? She's looking at me like I've lost my mind.
I think you have.
All right, until next time. Bye-bye.
Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.